I'm Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe and ESPN.
I'm Mike Lupica of MLB.com and MSNBC. And Ryan and I welcome you to the Monday edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. We usually have Mitch with us. Mitch is on vacation this week. Somehow Ryan and I will soldier on with a conversation that has been going on since I was 19 years old. And Bob, I will tell you this. You have heard me for the last week and a half go back and forth about whether there was still a last chapter to be written in the American League East. And a week ago today, I was talking to Matt Myers, my editor at MLB, and I said, I kind of think that the Yankees have this soft schedule this week. And then I went to Fenway the other day, Bob. We were both at Fenway. Saw the Red Sox win their second game after losing the first two games of the series. And I talked myself out of it and kind of hedged whether there was a last chapter still to be written. And then the Red Sox go down and get good and swept by the Tampa Bay Rays. And now the lead is six. And Bob, I know we can do the math the rest of the way, but what we have found out about the math in baseball is it can change dramatically in 1 week. So it went from 10.5 to six. And what's your anxiety level in Boston?
It's rising naturally because the Red Sox looked horrible. They weren't just swept. They were swept by a score of 25-4. The last two games, they were anemic. When you're beaten 25-4, it means that you're deficient in every area. And I will throw in defense, which has been a reasonable good start. Subject for them this year, but not this weekend. Everything, it was a Murphy's Law kind of a weekend in Tampa. And meanwhile, well, we'll get to Tampa, but we'll stick with the Red Sox in a second. No, it's very disturbing, and no Chris Sale, and he's going to start a throwing program, we're told, today, which is good. Eduardo Rodriguez is on the comeback trail. Maybe so maybe down the road they'll get some these guys, and everything will be fine. But right now, Mookie Betts, who has been arguably the best player in baseball the first three and a half months, is in a legitimate slump. He's lost over 20 points off his average in the last couple, 10, 12 days or so. They're springing leaks. They look very bad right now. And meanwhile, down in the Bronx, they're playing better. And they took advantage of it with Baltimore. And now they're about, I'm going to say, to take advantage of it with the White Sox.
But the Red Sox get the Marlins at home. All right. I think it was Gary Walters when he was running the NCAA tournament committee. He once said, if you torture statistics long enough, you can make them tell you whatever you want them to. Okay. If the Red Sox go 500 the rest of the way, they finish with 105 victories. For the Yankees to get to 106, they would have to go 23-9 the rest of the way. Now, they're capable of doing it, except after the White Sox, the tomato can part of their schedule ends. They still have a trip to make to Seattle. They have a trip to make to Oakland. They even have a trip to make to Minnesota, which is not going to be easy for them. They have six games left with the Boston Red Sox. I would say, if on fairness, Bob, the Red Sox schedule in September is more difficult than the Yankees, but only marginally more difficult. So it's still a pretty steep hill to climb, except for what you just said. If Chris Sale does not get healthy soon.
Right. Eovaldi now has, been good.
Yeah.
Very bad. First two starts, he went 15 shutout innings. He looked terrific. They're patting themselves on the back. Wow, how clever we were to pick up Eovaldi. He's going to, and it looked great. And now Eovaldi has been hittable, very, very, very hittable. Purcello, I still don't trust him. I'm sorry. He's got 15 wins. He's a Cy Young Award winner once removed, and I just don't trust him. I'm speaking strictly as a fan, a Red Sox season ticket holder now. I don't trust him. I don't feel any great confidence when he takes the mound. There's no one to give you any great confidence now except for...
For David Price.
How about that? What if Michael Lupica, and this is why we love sports. God knows. I mean, really, seriously, this is part of the reason why you and I we can't get this out of our blood. The idea of a story in which David Price is the savior,
the Bobby.
Boston Red Sox is it. I mean, my pulse is racing. I'm get me to the keyboard. So yeah, that. But it could be that he could be Mike. could they all? The Boston Red Sox Nation turns its lonely eyes to David Price.
This is the Monday edition of the Sports Reporters Podcast. Ryan and I are going it alone today. Bob, you know, every time there is a chance that a team, and in this case, the Red Sox, could blow a big lead, you go back to the year they were 9-0 at the start of September, and you go back to 1978. I don't look at that way. But if you want to see how a season can turn on a dime, I think we talked about this the other day. Look at what happened to the Los Angeles Dodgers a year ago. Because, Bob, the Los Angeles Dodgers were on their way to having the kind of regular season that people still think, despite this, a bad week, the Red Sox can have. And then what did they lose? Like 16 out of 17? Yes. I forget what the math was last year.
Right,
it was
like ballpark.
It was inexplicable. I mean, it was, in the words of the Princess Bride, inconceivable that they could do it. So in the back of my mind, and Ryan and I have had this conversation both on and off the air, I didn't think that the AL East was over even when it was 10.5 because of September, because of the six games left. But Bob, what was as troubling as the way they pitched this weekend is the way they got completely shut down before they got to Blake Snell yesterday.
They sure did, and that was we'll start right there. That guy is a very definite Cy Young candidate this year, and he was terrific. You know, he had two hits in six innings. They couldn't touch him, but nobody else is touching him either. Okay, but let's start. We're here with Tampa Bay. This pitching thing. Now, I'm not saying this is the way of the world. And you wouldn't go that far either, I wouldn't think. That it's not the way of the world. It's not the way everybody's going to go with the opener. And then, you know, but it has worked for them. And now when you read the comments from the Red Sox this week about the problems that it poses in preparation, it's throwing off a guy like J.D. Martinez because he does this elaborate preparation on a starter. And now, you know, he's prepping for a guy who's going to pitch one inning and then he doesn't know who's coming in after that. Anyway, it's working. And whoever is the person, whether it's Kevin Cash himself or what underling or what that came up with this idea and sold it to Cash, and Cash was able to sell it to his bosses, I guess.
It
works.
I talked to Eric Neander, who runs the baseball operation for the Rays, about this the other day, and this was an organizational conversation that they had during the winter. And they were looking at a whole 8 to 10 guys that they thought were potential starting pitchers. And finally, they decided to give it a shot. And as Eric said, it became a lightning rod the first time they began a game with their closer, Sergio Romo, pitching. And then, we're going to get back to the Red Sox and the Yankees, okay? This is just some stuff I mentioned in a column that I wrote about why Kevin Cash is the manager of the year in the American League. The Rays have used 20 rookies this season. That's a club record, third most in the big leagues after the Angels and the Marlins. Tampa Bay's rookies have combined, this was going into this weekend, for 527 games, more than anybody. The rookie pitchers have combined for 424 innings, the most in the league. Since the Rays started spring training, they have traded away the following veteran players, Ryan. Mm-hmm. Jake Odorizzi, Corey Dickerson, Steven Souza Jr., Alex Colom, Denard Span, Brad Miller, Nathan Eovaldi, Matt Andres, Johnny Venters, Wilson Ramos, Chris Archer, and Adeni Hecheverria. Okay? Yeah. They have used 16 starting pitchers, the most in the majors, and a new club record. 16 starters, Bob, if you're keeping score at home, are more than Tampa Bay's total from the three previous seasons combined. They have used 31 pitchers in all this season. They are now 70-61. Going into yesterday's game, Mr. Ryan, tell me if you had this in the office pool. They have the same one-loss record as the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Wow. That's all great stuff. You know, and I'm going to have to get to the you-know-what in the punch bowl here for 1 second, with 5-10 seconds. All this said, and it's all positive stuff, and it's great. It's too bad they're playing before nobody. It's that market is just so infuriating. And now, you know,
not just the market there, Bob, the market for baseball in the state of Florida.
Yes.
We have talked about this before. I don't even think it's sustainable. And now they're going to build them a new stadium in St. Pete.
Talking about, you know, what question, you know, well, you know the deal that the location has been controversial from the beginning, that they built this thing in the hopes that somebody would come in St. Pete rather than on the other side of the bay. And now they're blaming a lot of it on that alone. But I don't think it's just that alone. It may have something to do with it. But it's yeah, you're right. The state, I mean, between the Marlins and Tampa Bay together don't have the attendance of certain of a lot of franchises right now at this point in time. This is pearls before swine. It's a shame. It's such a rootable thing going on there. God, if I were, you know, people should be embracing this, and you know, they're thumbing their nose at the rich guys, and they're doing it this way. That place should have been rocking and rolling with the overflow crowd yesterday, and of course, no, it's a horrible place to see a game, but you know, still, that's this team is deserving of patronage.
Bob, explain me this, okay? How is it that ice hockey is sustainable in the state of Florida and baseball is not? Explain that to me, Ryan.
Well, I don't know. You know, it just gets, I don't know, because God love them. That's good for that. That's great. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know. And the funny thing about baseball in Florida, you know, it's the whole spring training thing. That's one thing. But patronage in general, I don't know. I don't get it. No, I don't understand. The one thing, we go down to Miami, the one thing that's always been interesting about Miami and this franchise since it came into a being is that the assumption was, I'm sure, on the part of people down there that when they put the team in place, is that they would be embraced by the Cuban community, supposedly a baseball-loving bunch of people. And the fact is that the Heat have always had more attention from the Cuban community down there than the Marlins have ever had. And that remains true to this day.
Bob, let's get back to the Yankees and the Red Sox. Let's look at the Yankees, okay, who have to think that they are in the process or maybe have survived a big blow. Okay, they haven't had Aaron Judge for a while. They haven't had Gary Sanchez for a while, okay? Yesterday, they batted Aaron Hicks third, Miguel Andujar cleanup, Neil Walker batted fifth. Okay, and Gleyber Torres, Bob, for all of the talk about what a wondrous talent he is and what a wonderful future he has, he's currently down to 268, and Andujar is the one who's hitting 303. We assume that they're going to get Judge back eventually. Hap and Lance Lynn, despite the stinker that Lynn threw in against the Marlins last week, have pitched reasonably well. Sonny Gray gave, again, but it's skewed, Bob. How can you evaluate what the Yankees just did over the weekend? Because it's the Orioles, except that they have played 500 ball against bad teams. I think the Mets, Marlins, and Orioles, I think going into this weekend, they were 500 for the season.
Yeah, and until this weekend, the Orioles had been a problem for them. But obviously, they rectified that. I think they have dodged a major big bullet, and a howitzer maybe even. And we were talking about Eovaldi. And with the Red Sox later earlier, Hap has been a terrific acquisition for them, and Gray, you know, it's not the story hasn't been written yet with Gray. I think it's pretty evident. Andujar, I just want to go. He leads rookies in every conceivable offensive category. Yep. Everything. He has been. Where would they be? You know, one of the things without him, particularly with Judge. We're closing on a month now without Judge, right? It was August 1st or so?
It's, and they said three. You know, and I always thought it was dopey for them to even suggest that he was going to be back in 3 weeks. Brian Cashman called Andujar and Torres. He referred to them in a conversation with me earlier in the summer as the booster rockets on the rocket ship to the moon we're trying to build. Okay. And again, they were essential when the Yankees did get hot in the middle part of the season, because so far the American League East, Bob, I think it's been four acts so far. The Red Sox started 17-2. The Yankees started 9-9 or 10-9. Okay. And then the Yankees got incredibly hot to the point where, Bobby, I was writing and thinking that they were going to be the team that was going to win 110 games. And on the 1st of July, we keep using this marker, but it was such an interesting intersection of the season. On the 1st of July, on a Sunday night game at Yankee Stadium, David Price gave up 5 home runs. The Yankees beat the Red Sox 11-1. At that point, they were 2 games ahead of the Red Sox in the loss column, I think. And then over the next month or so, the Red Sox picked up like 10 or 11 games in the loss column. And now comes this week. Now comes Act 4, Bob. And I think there's one more act to be written, and it will really be joined when the two teams get together in September for the first of the two series they have left at the stadium. And we all know that they finish at Fenway with three. A few weeks ago, I think nobody thought those games were going to be meaningful at Fenway. But, Bob, now they might be.
Yeah, the only way we thought they were going to be meaningful was if it meant that the Yankees needed to hold off the A's. Or someone else, you know, and have some ramifications about their placement in the playoffs. Oh, no, look, this is why I'm sorry. I was very cautious when it was 10.5. I can't get 78 out of my mind. I can't get 11 out of my mind. I know these things can happen. And baseball. Oh, Mike, would you want to grab a pen and paper? And
go ahead. I always do this. When you tell me to grab a pen, I do. Okay, now, I'm ready.
And I'm going to use a metaphor here. Baseball season is not a sprint, Mike. It's a marathon.
Oh God, that is so good, Bob. I never heard that.
That occurred to me. Yeah, like, I think yesterday afternoon. And I was thinking.
Bob. So look at this. Let's look at this from the Red Sox point of view. Then we'll look at it from the Yankee point of view, because the Yankees are feeling pretty good about themselves. They now have the White Sox. The Red Sox do get a soft place to land against the Marlins, except. The Yankees thought the Marlins were going to be a soft place to land last week, and were lucky to get a split of the two-game series down there. What Sale is obviously your biggest concern. Now list are Eovaldi and Porcello the next biggest concerns. It was weird the way the offense shut down this weekend. I don't think that the Red Sox offense can be shut down for a long time, but you know. They can't let last week now bleed into this week.
I'll tell you this. There's an interesting little about they played the Rays a while back, and the Rays held Mookie to a 1-for-12. And Alex Speier, who has been a tremendous addition to the Boston Globe staff in the last few years, Alex Speier wrote a column in which he said that he wondered aloud if other teams wouldn't be studying the what just went on, and the way, and here's the verb he used, in the way that the Tampa Bay pitchers, quote unquote, attacked Mookie Betts. And since that happened, he's had a couple, you know, I saw you, it was 6-for-36 at one point, and he did get a hit yesterday, but he's not the same. Has someone found out something? If that's the case, because we're talking about the guy, you talk about table setter, Mookie Betts up to last week was scoring a run a game, which is an unheard of pace, a very seldom reached pace in the history of baseball. It's not that common. And in our lifetime, it's been, I don't know, the last time someone even did it. And that's how frequently he was on base and how readily he was getting around. But if they have neutered him, that's a big blow to the Red Sox offense.
Well, what's also interesting to me about what is happening, by the way, I correct myself. The tomato can part of the Yankees schedule does not end with the White Sox, because they then play the Detroit Tigers. Oh. The White Sox come and play the Red Sox. And then the Red Sox come out of this week, Bob, and they have to play the Braves, okay? Ooh. And the baby Braves are going to be, but while they're playing the Braves, then the Yankees go to Oakland. So, again, September is going to be fascinating in the American League East. And, you know, I was standing in the press box at Fenway the other day talking to Dan Shaughnessy, our friend, the fine columnist for the Boston Globe, and he said, you know, the day to circle now between Yankees and Red Sox could be October 5th, which would be the first game of a division series between these two teams if everything holds and the Yankees win a wild card game. But again, not so fast. Not so fast.
Before we leave the subject of the American League East, we should have a sports reporter's tip of the fedora to Kendrys Morales.
Oh my God,
Kendrick, who is has hit a home run in 7 consecutive games.
Yep.
Now, and that is one shy of the record. And you were very well aware of one of the chaps who holds that record, Mr. Mattingly, and Ken Griffey Jr. is the second. And I remember the time as a young baseball fan when it was a huge deal following Dale Long.
Dale Long,
Adams,
and you know what, Bob,
of North Adams, Massachusetts.
I forgot that Don, I, for some reason in my memory, and I usually have a pretty good baseball memory, I thought Junior and Mattingly got stopped at seven, and Zach Lupica corrected me. He goes, Dad, three guys have done it. I said, did Don do it? He said, yes, he did.
He did.
And I completely had forgotten Junior. Completely had forgotten that Junior did that.
So that was Dale Long in 1956 for the Pittsburgh Pirates did it. And but anyway, Morales going for it. I guess they're playing tonight, but then whenever the next play. All right, I just want
to give All right, let's Bob, let's go to the National League because we this is our not a running joke, but a running theme on the Sports Reporters podcast is somebody from the National League has to go to the World Series.
Yep.
Okay? They have to. And by the way, we haven't even talked about the Astros, who I think are going to get well and have a big September, Bob. And I think they're actually going to go into the playoffs with a lot of momentum. What race interests you the most? Is it the Braves and the Phillies, who have kind of flown under the radar because neither one of them was supposed to do this year?
Yeah,
is it the Cubbies and the Cardinals, or is it the National League West, where the Dodgers still are hanging around? They're only three out in the loss column behind the Diamondbacks, two behind the Rockies. And, Bob, let's start there. At some point, they got to turn into the team or some facsimile of the team we saw last October.
Yeah, there's time for them to do that. And I know, for example, I know Turner is having a good run. And it's interesting. Kemp, of course, was an MVP the first half of the year. He's been totally falling off the cliff. But I don't know if he's coming, making his way back at all. No, yes, answer your question. The one that interests me the most, simply because of geography and boyhood, following, is the East because of the Phillies. And I've always had a little residual soft spot in my heart for the Phillies. And I like the way that they have reconstructed their team are there. The Braves, there's lots to like there. That's all that race. But we're going to both assume, I think, that the Cubs are going to, are going to hold.
Pick somebody to go to the World Series, I think we both, I think we'd both pick the Cubs at this point, right?
And boy, what a player. And I tell you what, I want, the more times I can see Baez play baseball, the happier I'll be. That guy is just.
And Bobby, it's funny. He had fallen a little bit out of the conversation of the gifted young middle. Don't you think he had, we were talking so much about Altuve and Lindor and Correa and somehow this, and then you watch this kid play baseball and you watch this, to use the great sports, his skill set, and his skill set, Bob, is electrifying and immense.
What other player in our knowledge, forget about our lifetime, ever from our reading of our historical probing of baseball, made himself famous for his tagging?
I know.
No one. And then that was the beginning. And now, then you look up, who's leading the league in RBI? Well, is he still leading? I haven't looked today, but I know he's right there. And it's he's something. But I think the Cubs in general are going to be okay. The West is fascinating, and I have to tell you, in all honesty, I'm not going to pretend any great knowledge about the inner workings of either the Diamondbacks or the Rockies. I'm going to have to do my homework more. About why they are doing whatever they're doing, because obviously the Dodgers are one thing that we keep pay attention to, but the fact of the matter is that there could easily be one of those other two teams that emerges out of the West, and I need to know more about them.
It's so funny, Bob. Guys just absolutely sneak up on you sometimes, and I'm not saying that Baez snuck up on anybody, because we had watched him and we watched the things he could do and the plays and the passion he played the game when they were winning the World Series. But yes, Bob, he is leading the National League in RBIs. He has 28 homers. He has 97 RBI. The NL RBI race, by the way, is really interesting. It's Baez, Suarez of Cincinnati, Aguilar of the Brewers, mm-hmm. and then Nolan Arenado, and Trevor Story of the Rockies. Yeah. So it's not like it's filled with household names. But when you look at the Cubs, you put me down on the list of people who didn't think it was a big deal when they got Cole Hamels. Who knew Cole Hamels was going to pitch like this?
This is not, of course, the Cubs have had the all-time acquisition in the course of a season when they had Sutcliffe back in 84. Nothing's going to top that. But this is, so they've got history on their side. This is big, what he's doing. I mean, this is a guy that's going to remember who he was. Let's remember the Cole Hamels of the Phillies. Let's remember the Cole Hamels of the World Series. And, you know, he had lost his luster, and he wouldn't be available to them if he hadn't lost his luster in Texas. And, yes, it looks like it's going to be big. And suddenly, you know, you're thinking about them for a rotation in the playoffs and you know, Lester and him, and looks starting to look good.
And they basically get, Bob, they get nothing out of Darvish. They end up basically getting little or next to nothing out of Darvish.
Nope, it's wait till next year, if ever, and that's that. And no, he's not a he's no factor. He's literally not a factor at all. No, he's not playing, and that's it. Yeah, but the Hamels was a great pickup. Way to go, Theo.
And let's go back to the West for a second, because Torey Lovullo, who a lot of people thought was in, you know, and Alex Cora has turned off to be off the hook as the Red Sox manager. Torey Lovullo, the Red Sox let him basically go to Arizona, and the Arizona Diamondbacks have been really good for 2 years. And one of my favorite guys in baseball manages the Colorado Rockies, and that is Bud Black. And Bob, they've hung in there. You know, we keep talking about the Dodgers. The D-backs and the Rockies are 1-2 in the National League West. And you know what? Talk about under the radar guys. How about Goldschmidt? Holy moly.
Oh, I know. Well, he had the bad start, but here he's back, and he's now once again going to be, if he has a big September, he'll be in the MVP discussion if that's the case. The other, he's putting together a tremendous career, period. He just is, yeah.
And Bob, can you see one of those two teams, the Rockies or the Diamondbacks, rising up in October and being a tough out for, you know, for the Cubbies, for example?
Sure, I would think. And you know, it's a matter of arms, too. I mean, and Arizona does have some of them, so... absolutely, and that would be, you know, it's good. It would be good. Definitely be good.
I mean, Greinke and you know, Corbin and Godley. I mean, nobody. I mean, no. These are, you know, and these are guys who in a short series could make the Diamondbacks very far. Okay, so again, September's coming. Labor Day next weekend. If you are a baseball fan, Bob, there is interest all over the map now. There really, really is only one runaway division, and that's the Indians, who have run away in the American League Central. The wild card races are really good. The divisional races are good, but provided that, you know, the Yankees do make a little bit more of a run over the next week. All right, let's switch to football. And this is such a great time of the year to talk about the rookie quarterbacks, because, you know, it's a small sampling. It is preseason football. But there are various dramas, good and bad, with all the big name quarterbacks who went in the first round of the NFL draft.
Oh, this is going to be a topic for years, because when you did have this quarterback crop, you know, that's just going to be the way it's going to be. People are going to be evaluating them one versus the other for years and years and years, the way we did in 83 and with that group, and then the second group a few years ago. So, oh, absolutely. And the one thing, and of course, you've identified it already, but you just can't overstate the tremendous interest in the juxtaposition of what's going on in the Meadowlands, obviously, since if Darnold turns out to be a premier quarterback, you can fill out the rest of that story. But Darnold, meanwhile, looks like he's got the job. And it doesn't make you get the idea that they want this, even though they had Bridgewater. You know, we all know Josh is McCown is a great, not great, but a perfectly suitable backup. But seems that this is what they wanted, and he's giving them what they want, right? And he's proving worthy of being the opening day starter.
You know, there's so many elements that were always interesting to me about the Sam Darnold story. One is where he went to college, Ryan, because it wasn't so long ago that the Jets fell in love, you might remember this, Bob, with another SC quarterback.
Yep.
Moved up in the draft to get him. And Mark Sanchez then took them. You know, it's you always have to give some context to the Sanchez conversation. Not what he became. They went to two straight AFC championship games in his first two seasons in the league. It's an unprecedented thing that Mark Sanchez did when Rex Ryan was still coaching the team. And then everything went terribly wrong. He got hurt in a preseason game and there was the butt fumble and now he's barely hanging on. I think he was with the Bears. I don't even know where he is right now. And so I was wondering if there would be any reluctance to go back. But Bob, remember how the season started last year when we thought that the Jets could be the team that was going to go 0-16. They were supposed to suck for Sam. And they ended up with the third pick in the draft. And I think they love Sam Darnold all along. I don't think they wanted Baker Mayfield. I don't think they wanted Josh Rosen. I don't think they wanted Josh Allen. I don't think they wanted any Joshes. I think they wanted Sam Darnold. But who did they have to sweat out with the second pick? The New York Football Giants. And it is well documented by now. I think Paul Schwartz wrote about this the other day in the New York Post. Dave Gettleman, the new Giants general manager, was swept away by Saquon Barkley and was not swept away by Sam Darnold.
Yeah, it's interesting that he had, in this world of of quarterbacks and all the dominance that talk about the quarterbacks, and it appears that was Gettleman's thing, but the Jets couldn't be sure, and they couldn't be sure, and they weren't, they weren't sure. So anyway, but it appears to be working out so far to their satisfaction.
But the calculation that the Giants made, and Bob, again, I'm pretty sure this was in Paul Schwartz's column, that Gettleman didn't even like Darnold the best, that he might have gone for big, strong Josh Allen, whose last start for the Bills was kind of a disaster, and they ended up in the concussion protocol. We'll get to that in a second. They're making a calculation that Barkley can help Eli Manning at the age of 37, and even with the state of the Giant defense, make one more Super Bowl while Eli is still, some semblance of Eli Manning. Because, Bob, you've heard me say this before. If Darnold is for the Jets what they hoped he would be, which is their quarterback for the next 10 years, and the first franchise quarterback they have had since J.W. Namath, then and the Giants don't make it to the Super Bowl, and they built the wish to build a dream on turns out to be a running back. And you've heard me ask this question before, Ryan. When was the last time a running back was the true difference maker for a Super Bowl champion? You could say Emmett, Terrell Davis for the Broncos was Davis the last guy that I remember being a running back who dragged his team across the finish line in the big game. So under this umbrella, I keep saying, if the Jets are right about Darnold, I don't care what Barkley does, because the Jets will have been right and the Giants will have been wrong.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting. And this is, it's why they pay the Gettlemans of the world the big money.
And so you tell me, Bob, do you think Baker Mayfield is going to be the real deal for the Browns?
I'm going to have to give you an absolutely waffle. I don't know. I respect the judgments, except that who made the judgment? Ordinarily, I would say I respect the judgments of the professionals, but I think we make an exception. And I mean, it's a cheap shot. Sure, it's a cheap shot to take a shot at the Browns, but what organization in the league deserves it more than they do? And I'm so the idea that they have chosen him it makes you wonder, what's wrong with him? What didn't everybody else see? I don't know. I mean, it's going to be so much to discuss it with this crop. It is unusual.
It's so interesting. Josh, Josh Rosen right now has a thumb injury.
Yeah,
for the Cardinals, he's played very little. Allen again was in and out of the concussion protocol around a pretty disastrous preseason start. And, we got a pretty small sampling early of Lamar Jackson. And, Bob, I'm going to die on this hill. I still think Lamar Jackson is going to be a football star. And then Flacco's obviously going to be their quarterback. But if something happens to him this year, I actually can see a scenario where Lamar Jackson gets into the game and
well, we're
really
be
shines.
eager to watch that. I remember when Michael Vick was a rookie going down to Atlanta to cover the game, and the starting quarterback, oh, come on, help me out. But Atlanta, anyway, he has to go out, and the kid comes in, and it was like throwing a electric switch, you know, and lighting up the Christmas tree at Rockefeller Center on that field when he took over at that point. This is the kind of effect that I think that Jackson might be able to have for the Ravens.
And, you know, by the way, despite the last thing we saw from Allen, there's a lot of people who think he's the one that has looked the best. And he's the one who may have the strongest arm.
He got banged. I mean, he got sacked five times. He got banged around pretty good. Their offensive line has got a problem, and that's the other thing. He's going to have to, you know, it's going to be a real challenge for him at there. So, but everybody knew he was the guy with the arm, the great arm. And, you know, not that they all don't have quality arms, but his was supposed to be the special, the real golden arm. Yeah, there's going to be endless ways, you know, time to discuss this thing as the season unfolds, and we see how these guys individually perform.
But of all these teams and all these quarterbacks, we keep coming back to Darnold because the Jets' history with quarterbacks going across a half a century, you know, they had flashes from this guy. They had flashes. They made a little bit of a run with Ken O'Brien. They made a little bit of a run with Chad Pennington. And when you add it all up, the best quarterback season they have had since J.W. Namath was Vinny from Elmont Testaverde, who was nearly the MVP of the league, playing for Bill Parcells. He was almost an afterthought when they first got him, and ended up taking them all the way to the AFC Championship game, where they finally lost in the second half to John Elway and the Broncos. And then the next year, the first quarter of the first game, he tore his Achilles. It has been an unbelievable quest to find the heir to J.W. Namath, and now they think, fingers crossed, that they may have found him with Sam Darnold.
Well, the whole thing, as you said, a half a century. The fact of the matter is that the 2019 will, in fact, mark the 50th anniversary of on January 12th. I know where I was, Mike. I was at Fort Knox dodging duty.
Protecting our country, weren't you, Bob?
Yeah, well, I was protecting it, trying to find a way to watch the damn game, and we got caught in the third quarter where we had sneaked away from our duty that day. But anyway, it will be 50 years, which is really hard to grasp for some of us, but and very difficult to accept for Jets fans. I certainly understand.
And Bob, is there a more complicated historical resume than J.W. Namath? And can you remember another instance where somebody made it to Canton essentially for one victory, in which he wasn't even the best player on his own team that day?
16-7, he's just handing the ball off to Matt Snell, right?
And Emerson Boozer.
But the video's there, Mike. We'll see it every January, waving that finger, the one finger, and I told you so, and the famous press conference at the swimming pool, you know, isn't that where the guarantee was given?
It was a throwaway line at the pool at wherever they were staying in Fort Lauderdale. Yep.
But, right, I mean, his numbers, when people look up today, first of all, he had more, off the top of my head, I think, he had more INTs than TDs.
Bob,
career.
I happen to have the page in front of me. J.W. Namath had 220 career interceptions against, wait for it, Ryan, 173 touchdown passes.
Ah!
It's the weakest. It might be the weakest quarterback resume in the Hall of Fame.
Wow. Oh, it's hard to believe that anything's close. Wow.
He's the great saint for Jets fans. He remains a charismatic figure. Yeah. You know, everybody does flips when he puts his imprimatur on Sam Darnold. But yeah. you got to remember Super Bowl III and not look too deeply into his stats. And obviously, you know, the knees are a huge part of this, okay? And if they had the science and the technology and the medicine then that they have now, maybe Joe Namath's career would have been completely different. But his prime, Bob, his prime was pretty damn short, okay? It really was a four-year period, 66, 67, 68, and 69. And the most touchdown passes he ever threw again, he threw 20 in 1974. Okay. But it was the short, sweet season of Joe Namath. And now they're hoping to bring this back to the kid that Sam Darnold is going to be the heir to that. And God knows, Bob, these people have waited. I can't think of another position in football where people have waited the way Jets fans have.
Yeah, maybe somebody's aching for a good long snapper. You don't know about that there, Mike.
But that's so anyway, again, the Darnold Barkley thing is something that is going to go on for a long time. And not just because one went two and one went three, but because of where they play, Ryan. They're playing in the same stadium.
Same stadium. No, I know. It's delicious. It's great. You keep everybody in New York busy for a long time. It's great.
Bob, before we leave pro football today, we'll spend just a quick second on the U.S. Open tennis, which is starting in Flushing today. How much of a lingering story is it going to be in Boston? And by the way, the context in Boston for people who don't live where Mr. Ryan lives is that it's not unreasonable, Bob, that you have four professional sports teams who have ambitions about making it to the finals of their sport this year. I mean, that's a fair statement. I don't think anybody else.
Three for sure. And
three
the
for sure. And then who knows how good the Bruins are going to be. Okay. How much of a lingering story is it going to be about this weird relationship between the quarterback and this?
We have trainer. To see how this plays out. We had another little twist to it this week when Alex Guerrero, the guru, the Brady's guy, was allowed back on the plane as they went down to Charlotte.
And then not Brady on the wouldn't talk about it, right?
Not on the sideline, but on the plane. And that's a change from the policy that was revoked last year in the middle of the season by Belichick, who declared Guerrero out of the plane and off the sideline, which was causing a breach with Brady. So now he's halfway back. He's on the plane. He got to go. It means he didn't have to get his own transportation. I don't know if he got to go on the bus once they got to the airport. I don't know. But anyway, yeah. Oh, no, this thing isn't anywhere near settled. And we're not even close to any sense of resolution or how it's going to play out or what it all means. No, absolutely not. No. And meanwhile, on the field, the great question here is who's he going to throw to? You know, who's he going to throw to?
It's a rule that there has to be someone he can throw to, right?
You know, Giselle pointed it out very accurately after a game not several years ago that my husband cannot throw and catch the ball, the same ball that he threw. And that was quite prescient of her. So, yes, you do need a receiver. Right now, it's Chris Hogan, it's Philip Dorsett, and it's Cordarrelle Patterson. That's not striking fear into the hats of the DCs around the league right now. Edelman comes back and he looks fine in his exhibition performance, but he's asked to sit out games 1, 2, 3, and 4. It's going to be, and of course.
Bob? Is this the year? Is this the year the run ends?
Well, I didn't think so. But I guess, look, it all depends on, quite frankly, how far they have fallen. You know, as they fall, how far, who's able to rise up just enough to make it uncomfortable for them? Which one of the other three is going to do that? And you tell me which one of the other three in that division is going to do that.
I know.
I don't know who it's going to be. I mean, I don't see any evidence. It's certainly not going to be the Jets. It's certainly, you wouldn't think, unless Darnold turns out to be the rookie of the year. You know, who knows? Maybe Darnold will turn out to be great. But even so, I don't know. It certainly doesn't appear to be Buffalo, which leaves us with Miami. So I don't know. But
it's so funny.
This, Mike, it's different down there in Foxborough. There is a change. There is a It was a tumultuous offseason. There were tremendous defections. There's a lot of questions down there this year. There's no doubt about that. Coaching situation. Patricia's gone. We'll see about the defensive coordinators thing. And because Belichick's always been the architect of the defense, but there's definitely a different feel there this year.
All right, but before we get to parting shots, and Ryan knows that I care about tennis more than he does, and probably care about tennis more than practically anybody who isn't making their living being a tennis writer or broadcaster. But Bob, I'm going to ask you, as a fan of the sport,
yep,
and a fan of all sports, a question I asked Zach Lupica the other day. Serena Williams and Roger Federer, Federer just turned 37, Serena will turn 37 next month, have a combined total of 44 major singles championship. Will that number ever get to 45?
Yes, I think so. And
one of them is going to win another major?
Well, I mean, the more likely, Serena, I think.
Right.
More likely, Serena. That's all. But I think it wouldn't be inconceivable that Federer could find a way to have another great fortnight and do it. But just because it's Serena and because of her overall dominance over the years when she gets herself. I mean, I know it's now an incredible thing, and now she's in the post pregnancy, and now there's talk about the cat suit, and she can't wear it in France next year. No, but I mean, it's about if I take her word for it, it's about the fact that it helps her about the blood clot thing. She's got issues, physical issues. She's got emotional issues. I mean, she's a mom, and it's a priority now. And still, I wouldn't be remotely surprised to see Serena smiling at the end of the 2 weeks.
And by the way, Mr. Federer has been given a nightmare draw, potential draw, mm-hmm, at the U.S. Open, where he would have to play the talented but little wacky, Nick Kyrgios in the third round. Mm-hmm. And do you know who his quarterfinal opponent will be, Bob, if he makes it into the second week?
Would it be a left-handed Mallorcan?
No, it will be Novak Djokovic in the quarters of the U.S. Open. And so this is not going to be an easy path. He got upset by Kevin Anderson at Wimbledon. Again, I saw the final he played against Djokovic a couple of weeks ago. He still looked like Fed. The match turned, as often they do between high-level players, on a couple of points. But, Bob, the favorites going into this do not include him. It is Nadal and it is Djokovic. Mm-hmm. And, I would say we keep yearning for just once a Federer-Nadal match at the Open. It's almost inconceivable that they have never played one, okay? But off of what we saw, and an epic Wimbledon semi between Nadal and Djokovic, that's the match I want to see in New York next week.
Okay, sounds good.
And as for the women, I have no idea. I mean, the best story is if Serena rises up. And Mary Carillo was pointing out the other day, it wasn't shocking that she lost to Kerber in the Wimbledon final. Okay, she was still in the early innings of this comeback. She had played no one really on her way to a match against Kerber, somebody who had beaten her in a Grand Slam final. But it would be fun. It would be fun to see old mom make a run in New York over the next 2 weeks. Do you not think so?
Oh, yes, I do. Definitely.
Whether she's wearing a cat suit or not. Right, Bob? It's time for our parting shots, and I will let my friend, Mr. Ryan, go first.
Adam Pac-Man Jones must be the greatest cornerback and return man of all time, Mike. Now, I say that because yet another team is now willing to hold its nose and provide employment to one of the most unsavory and unrootable characters who has ever played any professional sport in this country's history. Now, we know that 99.9% of the time, talent wins out when the discussion turns to evaluating the moral aspect of having a troublemaker on your team. But I would argue that Pac-Man should constitute the remaining 0.1%. Simply put, this man does not deserve the privilege of playing in the NFL, period. He should have been declared persona non grata a decade ago when he was involved in a Las Vegas strip club melee in which three people were injured and a shot was fired. And that was hardly his only transgression. But the Denver Broncos are now apparently desperate enough to put this guy on their team. That's sad and disgraceful.
After playing this weekend's Northern Trust Open at Ridgewood Country Club in Jersey, somebody actually asked Tiger Woods a question about his relationship with Donald J. Trump, 45th president of the United States and the real king of all media. And Tiger talked about how he'd known Trump pre-presidency and golfed with him before and after he got elected. Finally, Tiger said this: "Well, he's the president of the United States. You have to respect the office. No matter who is in the office, you may like, dislike personality or the politics, but we all must respect the office," end quote. Now, there's a fair debate to be had about whether the guy about whom Tiger was speaking has respected the office. But what was even more interesting to me is that in his own way, Tiger was not just setting himself apart from the guy who replaced him as the biggest star in American sports, which is LeBron James, but he was also making a political statement, whether he thought about it that way or not. And he will be making one the next time he does play golf with President Trump. Funny which ones of those political statements get high-profile African-American athletes in troubles these days and which ones don't. Thank you for listening to us. We are with you every Monday and Friday. Mitch will be back with us on this coming Friday. If you go and find us wherever you can find your podcast, obviously you found us today. If you want to leave a comment about us, again, this is an awful lot of fun for us. We believe it's an awful lot of fun for you. It's a tradition that began a long time ago on Sunday mornings on ESPN and now continues on this podcast every Monday and Friday. So until Ryan and I talk to you again on Friday, have a great week, everybody.